a good idea for you to hang around. But if you got other things to do, then you can do that as well, because that's what we kind of need to know sometimes. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Harker's Auto. They've been around since 1967. They're at 38th Avenue and Indian School. They're really good at what they do. I'm always very impressed with the magic that they seem to come up with to fix cars that nobody else can. And they do oil changes and everything like all the rest of us. But what they do really, really well is diagnose and repair cars. So if you have a car and every time you honk the horn, the rear windows go down, then if you live on the west side, Harker's Auto at 38th Avenue and Indian School would be a place that I would probably stop by. I'm going to mention this twice, this hour and next hour. And just take this for what it's worth, okay? There's no hidden agenda here. Since 1989, the Secret Santa Club has been involved in Christmas. We're going on 31 years. And Secret Santa Club is a bunch of people that want to remain secret. And they want to do something nice for a group of whatever. And my business runs the Secret Santa Club, so the membership list is in the safe, and I'm the only one that has the combination. But what we do is we have people donate money, and then we go effectively use that money for people. Now, I'll give you some examples. We do rest homes a lot, so we go in and ask the people at rest homes, who doesn't have family? Who's not going to have Christmas this year? And they give us a list of anywhere between 5 and 20 names. So the ladies that are also an important part of this will go in and interview them and their caretakers and find out that they've never had slippers or they knew this, and the guys get shaving cream and new shaving, and they get some Aqua Velva, which is their time of the year. And the women, we pay for fingernails and hairdos. You know, we give them a coupon and pay it in advance. So we've done rest homes. We've done hundreds of kids in group homes. I know that we spent $7,000 at one group home, and our average at group home is $10,300. These are kids that are wards of the state. They've oftentimes been orphans, or they've been removed from their families' homes, or for whatever reason, they're wards of the state. So the whole idea is that they're in 1999, we did 70 kids in 9 different group homes. And we also did 60 people in 3 nursing homes, blankets, slippers, stuffed animals, the stuffed animals for the older people because they love that, sweat, pants, toiletries, stuff like that. I'm going to continue to go on. We did 688 presents for 108 kids in 16 group homes in 2001. We did 43 families and 129 people in 2004. In 2007, we had a tremendous amount of money. We did a family of 9 for presents for Christmas, 2 elderly men in the Veterans Hospital who had no family. We bought robes and blankets and socks and slippers and stuffed animals. And then we did 2 nursing homes, and we did $2,500 was given to Bash's food drive, and we purchased a whole bunch of toys for tots, and we gave them money so they could buy stuff. So anyway, if you want to be a part of this, it's anonymous. No one's going to know except my wife, Renee. And we don't keep a list. We assign you a number. So if we lose the list or somebody gets the list, they're not going to know who you are. So this is something that we found to be, it's different for our family because we didn't like the idea of waking up on Christmas morning and at the end of the day there was an emptiness inside that we could have done better. God's blessed us, so we were better. So if you want to become a part of the Secret Santa Club, then you have to send me an email, mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. Last year, we made hygiene bags so that they could be given to the homeless because a church in Tempe has showers for them on a specific date and time. So they bring in these showers, and what we provide is we provide all the hygiene bags for the homeless people that go in and shower and stuff. So we give them toothbrushes and deodorant and shavers and stuff like that. And then obviously we gave a whole bunch of money to the food drives, and then we had $1,000 worth of toys for Crossroads Youth Intervention. And then we gave, actually a couple of mattresses to group homes from kids who didn't have mattresses. And then we donated $1,000 to you, Mom, and then $575 to Mary's Food Bank, St. Mary's. So we use all the money. And I want to tell you that my family matches the highest number we get. Now, there's been a couple of my buddies who have pledged $5,000 or $10,000, and my family's matched that. It doesn't necessarily make me happy, but it does, because they have to match that as well. So they got to throw down money before I match it. So that's called the Secret Santa Club. You won't find it anywhere else, but you'll wake up Christmas morning and you'll feel better, I promise. Okay, continuing on with stories. You know, and I know, that there are shops out there that charge you for more than what they did, or they charge you an exorbitant amount of money to put a fuse in your car. But let's pretend there's 1,000 repair shops in the valley. And so if 10% of them are bad, that's 100 of the 1,000. And I think that it's actually lower than that. So here's the story. The story is there's a car comes in, and it has, and this is at a shop. It has a red brake light on, and that's what they want addressed, red brake light. So the technician gets it, and he determines that the red brake light, because one of the other persons said, hey, by the way, you pull that into your bay and you've got a bad brake light out, he puts a bad brake light bulb in it. That's valid. It doesn't serve the light on the dash, but it's a nice thing to do. So then he says the pull handle on the parking brake, that assembly is defective, which is keeping the light on. So we order a pull handle, we bid the thing, and we put it on the car. It doesn't fix it. At this point, we don't really know the shop, and I'm talking in third person here. The shop doesn't know that that didn't fix it. But then there's a recommendation in the parts department that he needs a brake light switch. And so they put a brake light switch in it. So at this particular time, the story goes is there's other senior technicians in this shop, and they're walking by, and they can see him struggling. Now, he came from a very large shop. He was hired because he was looking for a job, and his skills were represented as being significant, especially on the diagnostic side, and that's where this rub is. So finally, one of the senior techs walks by, and he says, hey, and his name's not John, but I'm going to use John. Hey, John, what are you working on here? And he goes, well, I got a red brake light on the dashboard. And he goes, is the parking brake on? No, I just replaced that and the handle and the switch. He says, well, and he opens up the hood and he goes, John, the brake fluid's low and it has a float in it. He said, let's put some brake fluid in it. So this other senior tech pours some brake fluid into the master cylinder, and as soon as the float comes up between the minimum and the maximum, the light goes out. So this gets back to management, and management's really unhappy because this is the second or third time that the diagnosis was defective. There was a bunch of parts on a car who had a pull to the right, and the repair that was bid was, let's replace the entire front end for $5,000. The shop decided to give it to somebody else to get a second opinion, and the somebody else, he swaps the tires from left to right on the front. That's normal. That's what us senior guys know. That's what the junior guys that are really smart know. When the car pulls left or right, the first thing you do is swap the front tires. Now, one of two things will happen. It'll start pulling to the other side, and now you know it's a tire. You're going to look at the tire wear to see if it really is in alignment, because the customer comes in and tells you to align it because it pulls hard. But we're supposed to be smarter than that. So you swap the tires, and if it continues to pull, and the pull moves to the left side, then you got a tire pull. And if it continues to pull to the right side, even though you swap tires, then you're going to have to put it on the alignment rod and check it out. So this was bid at $5,000. Then it was given, because the shop isn't on a little concern, given to somebody else. He cross-rotates the tires, and the car goes straight down the road. So when you cross-rotate the tires, it's either going to continue to pull to one side, or it's going to pull to the other side, or it's going to go straight. And I'm saying 85% of the time it goes straight. So the customer was billed for a swap the front tires. They're gone. But we still have a technician that's got a diagnostic problem. So not too long ago, the technician was caught in another lie about what he did to the car, and he was dismissed and sent. Now today, technicians are hard to find, and there's far more jobs than there are people. So he won't have a problem finding another job. It's okay. The problem is that he's been dismissed from a shop for being caught multiple times lying about what he did. Remember that brake light switch? Turns out that he broke it. And so he said, that's one of the things I need to fix.
2 minutes.
And the shop bought a brake light switch and he put it in the car. That's not what it's supposed to be. So there's lots of good shops out there. I just described situations that are two that I know of and that the shop owner and I have talked about. And so I think what you need to do is what I've suggested that you do. You always ask for your old parts back and you make sure that you ask the person you're talking to. So let me get this straight. After you spend, I'm being facetious here. After you spend $5,000 on my front end, it's not going to pull to the right. And the shop better say, yes, you're right. Of course, in this case I cited, crossing the tires took care of it. And tire inflation as well. You know, if you got one tire sitting at 20 pounds and one tire sitting at 35 pounds, it's probably going to pull. So checking the inflation is something that we need to do right off the front. But those are the diagnostic processes that we're supposed to know. When you're an ASE Master Tech, you should know those. And you better know those.
1 minute.
So those are the kinds of issues that our industry runs into. And I'm not going to ever say that everybody's lily white in my industry, and you're not going to say and sell me on the idea that all the dentists and the doctors and all the lawyers and all the professors and all the people in the churches, that they're all lily white, because that ain't happening either. So when you get down to it, every business has the bad part of the business, but the auto repair and the auto repair bins has itself. It has just like that themselves. There's been many employees terminated from my business since 1979. Some of them were just argumentative, so they wanted to do their way before the shop foreman got to do his way. Some of them misrepresented their talents and their skills, and they misrepresented their certifications. So over, you know, since 1979, I've dismissed my fair share, but if you roll them all out over, what's that, 41 years, then it's probably, if it was one or two a year, it's not that bad. And it's probably less than two a year. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are open on the other side of this break. I'm going to tell you one more story about a transmission that was bid for $7,000 to $10,000. That's what the transmission would have cost, and it was fixed for $750. So 7,000 to 10, and the truck had 200,000 miles on it. So the thought process might have been, well, it's got 200,000 miles. Why would we fix it? Well, the customer's allowed to make that decision, not the shop. So 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. I got a couple callers, but before I do that, I just want to clear something up. My wife's mad at me. We were talking about the Secret Santa Club, a club that my family's run since 1989. And we give, we make Christmas special for kids and elderly people and rest homes and disabled veterans and stuff like that. It's important to know that we match the highest donation, so every once in a while somebody will test us on that, and that's okay. And we've also given away $210,001 in all the time we've done this. $210,000 plus a buck. So if you'd like to be a part of that, email me mark@marksalem.com. You'll never be on a list. Nobody's going to call you and say, hey, you already gave to this, so we want to be your next charity. That won't happen. We don't care what you give. We don't care. You can give us anything you want. And at the end of the Christmas holiday, then you're going to get a letter that describes exactly what we did with every single penny of the money that we had to make. And we focus on elderly and young kids that don't live at home, young kids that live in group homes, young kids that are without moms and dads and that may only have a Christmas based on a budget that the state has. And I'm telling you what, there ain't no budget. All righty, Don, you're up first. How can I help you?
Hey, I had a question. I have an 81 CJ5. We had a remanufactured four-cylinder put in it. That's what it had before last year. We'll just take it up to Pine Top and drive it around. It's never been right since this shop did it, but the question I have today is, we're driving it and just around the house, and it's getting super hot, and I just couldn't figure it out, like smoke coming out of the intake manifold and, the valve cover. And so I feel the radiator, and it's, like, cold. And I don't understand. So I crack the cap, and it's steam. All of a sudden, it bubbles up, and steam comes out. Then all the hoses have heat in it. So I thought, well, maybe the thermostat's bad. I don't know. So I replaced that, and now everything's hot. It's just not cooling still. I'm at a loss. I don't know much about that.
When you say it's not cooling still, are we looking at a gauge? And if so, where's the needle on the gauge?
The needle doesn't work. I'm basing this on it. It's like everything. It's smoking out of everywhere oil could come out of. It's getting hot. And I mean, you feel the hose. So
the technical aspect of this is you get it warm when you've got the symptom, the smoke, and you take the oil cap off the four-cylinder motor and you put a piece of tissue across the motor. And the question is there, have we got more pressure coming out than sucking on the way in? Because we have a PCV valve on that, and really the tissue should draw the you're gonna hold on to the piece of tissue tightly, but it'll draw, you know, it'll suck it in, and if you got more pressure, and then we have to make sure the PCV valve is operating, because the PCV valve is the positive crankcase ventilator. So we actually are sucking the pressure out of the engine and it's sending it through the intake manifold and back out the tailpipe. So we could have a PCV valve problem. If you want to find out the temperature of the motor, go down to Harbor Freight and buy yourself one of those temperature guns with the red dots, and then gun the top hose and the bottom hose. And obviously the top hose should be a little hotter than the bottom, because the coolant comes out of the top hose, goes through the radiator, and comes back into the engine a little colder. But it sounds like you have a blow-by problem, and if you have a blow-by problem and that smoke is in the motor, it should be fouling one of the spark plugs. So if you pull all four spark plugs and you find one of them is bathed in oil and the other three are nice and pretty, then that you've answered your own question.
Is there? I'm going to do all that today. I just wrote all that down. So when there was no water coming through the radiator, that's a pressure problem then?
Well,
the first time before I placed the thermostat, like, I felt the radiator after I drove it down to the gas station and back, and it was ice cold, and I was like, the engine was doing that smoky thing. I was like, I wonder why this happens. And I put a rag on. I just cracked the cap on the radiator. Then I heard it bubble, and then all the steam came out, and then it filled the radiator.
Okay. Well, again, we're running from the output of the motors through the upper radiator hose. So if the thermostat's not opening and you're touching the upper radiator hose and it's closed and it's cold, then the thermostat's not working. And so what happens then is we don't have any circulation, but the water in the engine, we got water in the radiator, but it's nothing. We got water in the engine, and it's starting to get hot and boil. So when you pull the radiator cap, then we're going to have an explosion. So I'm not going to trust that you have the skills, neither do I, to touch things and know what's going on. Okay, that's just not something that's very valuable in our industry. But if you have a temperature gun and the thermostat's at 190, it's going to be kind of cold and on the hose, the upper hose, until it gets to 190. Then boom, it's going to come up to 190 or more. So that's why we use temperature guns. It's called a handshake too. Those of us that are really old, we just grab a hold of that radiator hose and we know the difference between good and bad. But anyway, I've given you enough information. You should be able to figure this out.
Well, I appreciate it. I'll work on that today.
Okay, good luck to you. Tom, you're up next. How are you, Tom?
Hi, Mark. Thanks for taking the call.
You bet.
I've got a 2006 Duramax diesel.
Okay.
And I'm having I bought it in 2006 new. I put a programmer on it from day one. And Magnaflow exhaust, and I've had zero problems with it in 14 years. Now, in the last couple of weeks, I've had a problem in the morning with it not wanting to start, and I have to go out and pump up the little pressure thing there, and I've got a little tiny leak in there that's causing it to drain down overnight. Now, here's my dilemma. I was going to replace all the O-rings in there, and then I've got a couple of buddies that have advised me to put one of those lift kits or lift tank, well, they call it lift pumps on there. And I'm not sure if I should do that. Kind of like the stock system, but wanted to get your opinion on that.
I'm with you. Why are we going to cover up this problem with an electric lift pump? Why are we going to drain the diesel fuel out of it because you have an upstream leak? And we're going to turn the key on, and then we're going to pressurize the system. So we're going to add a subset of pressure devices to cover up what really is nothing but a small fuel leak in the fuel pump area. So this is something that you see. When was the last, isn't the fuel pump and the pump near the filter in the same housing as the filter?
Yes.
Okay.
It's the heater leak. I mean, there's a line that goes through there, a wire that's for the heater system in the fuel.
Okay. We see the leak when the fuel filter just really isn't tight enough. You just got to manhandle that thing. So, yep. I mean, that's the first place I would look is I just put a big pair of water pump pliers on that son of a gun and tighten it up. Get the fuel leak fixed, and then your problem's gone. That's as simple as it gets. But adding all that stuff to cover it up, you know, that's like, you know, you have – I'm this is a terrible example. You have lung cancer, so I'm going to buy you a new suit. What's the relationship here? Why are we? That was a terrible example. Forget that. Okay. Thank you very much, Tom. Thank you. Okay. So when we come back, I'm going to do that transmission question, and I'm going to tell you about a transmission that was supposed to be $7,000 to $10,000 that left the shop after $750. That's why it's important to get a second opinion when you're talking about big dollars, especially if the vehicle moves. So it's no big deal to go. One of the places you can find good shops is on my website, marksalem.com. I stand behind you. Here's my promise. If that shop does something wrong, then we're going to take that issue to the Better Business Bureau Auto Advisory Committee. If the Better Business Bureau Auto Advisory Committee tells the shop to do something and the shop doesn't do it, if they tell them to give the customer $500 and the shop doesn't do it, I'll give you the $500 and I fire the shop. That's it. We're done. No second chances. I am just like a school teacher. You get one chance. This isn't bowling where you get 10 chances. This isn't baseball when you get 3 chances. That's it. So that's how I handle it. 602-508-0960. Well, 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, Mark Salem here, your host. We'll be here till 12 o'clock, so if you'd like to talk cars, you can. Action Auto Repairs at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since 1983. You don't need to worry about Tom taking advantage of you. You don't need to worry about Tom lying to you. You don't need to worry about them telling you that they put a part on that they didn't put a part on. They're honest. They're dependable. They're a good, full-service, family-owned auto repair shop that's been around, again, since 1983. So Action Auto Repair, if you're up on the I-17 near Deer Valley and you don't have a shop, then take your car there and just try them out. Real quick, so this is my shop. I'm going to tell you right now this is my shop. So guy brings a Dodge truck in, and it's got all kinds of drivability problems. There is a guy that owns a wholesale transmission shop that doesn't want to deal with the public. So he'll only deal through shops. And there's a lot of shops that do business with him. But there is... we used to have a shop back in the 70s and the 80s. Mike and Leon were the best transmission guys in the whole wide world. It changed hands, and we had to find somebody else. We didn't get this experience. So we went with Lorenzo. This kid, he is without a doubt the most skilled transmission guy I've ever met in all my life. So we get the truck in. My son calls Lorenzo and says, hey, here's the symptoms. Lorenzo says, pull the pan. He says, I already have. He says, look up inside there. You're going to see a big plate. Are all the screws in the plate? No. What do you see? Well, the plate's all bent up, and underneath is these really big, heavy springs. Okay, I know what to do. I'll be over there in an hour. So he comes over there. He brings a brand new plate. He brings like 4 little valves that fit inside this other end. Then he brings the springs in, and he puts this big plate on, puts all the bolts in, turns around and says to Alan, I'm going to bill you $750. See you later. So Alan's going, yeah, right. So he saves the parts, which is the old springs in the plate, and he puts fluid in, puts the pan on, puts fluid. He goes and drives it, problem solved. This kid diagnosed the truck over the phone. Now, he did a van, too. The van had a problem with shift pattern. So we call him up, and we say, hey, this van's in here. It's got a shift pattern. It's a Ford. And he goes, I think it was a Ford truck. No, it was a big Expedition. He says, I already know what it is. I'll be over there in a minute. So he comes over there and he reaches behind the engine. And there's a big, huge wire harness that goes from the driver's side to the passenger side. So he says, give me your shop rag. We give him a shop rag. He lifts up the harness. He sticks the shop rag underneath it and he sets it down. He goes drive it. You're not going to fix our problem with a shop rag. Crawl out of underneath the hood of that and go take a break or something. Get some coffee. Just go drive the car. Drive the car and the problem solved. So he says, underneath that wire harness, there's one wire and it's yellow and it rubs on the back of the bell housing. I want you to move that wire harness. I want you to tape it up and I want you to start and go 3 inches to the left and 3 inches to the right. Do lots of black tape and then put some duct tape around it and it'll be fixed. Why don't we just fix the wire? Because the wire's only chafed. The rest of the metal is there. It's still got 20 or 30 strands of copper. It's just grounding it out. What do you do? What do you do with that kind of skill? So we do it. We don't believe it. We do it. Give it back to the customer and say, I think his service call bill was, I don't know, $70. I said, yeah, you're at 75 by the time we add all the stuff, sales tax and all that stuff. And I said, but you don't have to pay for it until you're absolutely sure. He comes back 3 days later and he goes, it's fine. It hasn't happened since then. So this kid, Lorenzo, is just an amazing kid. He is the light of the transmission industry. It's unfortunate he won't deal with customers because he does have nice social skills. He just wants to deal with the shop. And he says, when I ask him a question, the customer can't answer it, but the shop can. So I just as soon have the shop between me and the customer. And his pricing is related to that. His pricing is definitely related to that. So by the time the customer gets the bill, unless the shop's really greedy, and most of us aren't, by the time the customer gets the bill, like for instance, we had to charge for pulling the pan and all the fluids and all the filters. So we did that plus all the parts that he replaced, plus he charges his labor charge. So at the end of the day, the customer's bill isn't substantially different if it's 5% different. 10%, I'll give you 10%. All righty, Vince, you're up. What can we do for you today, Vince?
Hello, sir. So, long-time listener, but I've got a question that's a little bit outside of your normal.
Okay.
I bought my daughter a 1974 Karmann Ghia. You're not allowed to say anything. It's her favorite car. But it doesn't have air conditioning. So, Phoenix, no air conditioning, not really a great combination. But every time I look up anything, you know, these are really old places that are offering, because it's 1974 car. Is there anything like more modern to put in that's not going to, you know, drop it down to 5 miles an hour every time the AC kicks in?
That thing has the motor. I mean, some of the model airplanes have bigger motors than that, you know? You need to raise your hand and tell your daughter you're sorry you made a mistake buying another Karmann Ghia. I'll tell you what you can do to fix it. It ain't gonna go well at high school or college. Just cut a square hole in the top of that and put a swamp cooler on there and put a generator in the trunk. You know, the answer to your question, and I'm teasing you, and thank you for laughing. The answer to your question is you got a bunch of dashboard work to do that Karmann Ghia isn't going to like at all. So we're going to end up with a hang down unit underneath there, and you already know there's no room for a hang down unit. So we have to put an evaporator underneath the dash, and that's what that hang down unit's going to be. We have to put a condenser in front of the radiator, and that thing already has overheat problems, so we're just going to add to it. Oh, or we can put in 5 cooling fans, and by the time, and then we have to have a compressor mount. We have to have all the hoses, all the metering valves, like the expansion valve and stuff. Then we have to wire in the low pressure switch and the high pressure switch, and by the time we're done, you could have bought her a brand new VW and that has nice cold air conditioning. So I don't know what you're going to do, Dad, but you said I couldn't make any funny comments. And I still decided to hit you with the swamp cooler on the roof.
I wish I could help you.
There are going to be kits on the internet that you can find, but you don't have enough horsepower to spin a compressor. You're going to take that thing into a heat zone that it's probably not designed for. So instead of running half on the gauge, it's going to run 3/4 on the gauge. And there's nothing you can do about that. And we've got to do major modifications and installations. And to be honest with you, I don't know anybody who would take that. Now, I am going to give you a name. He's crazy.
Okay.
He's as crazy as any lunatic you've ever met. Okay? He'll take anything on. Go talk to Tom Blackwell at Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Greenway. And tell him that you've talked to, don't say Mark Sale, tell him you've talked to all kinds of people, and they said there's no one in the earth that could pull this off. There's nobody. But I did hear from a parts guy at a counter, and I heard him talking about Tom Blackwell, and he says Tom has a magic wand, and Tom will fix a 747 if you can land it on Greenway Road. And so here's what happened just the other day. Somebody writes, and they want a new cruise control in a newer car that didn't come with it, but there is some connections and electronics that need to be added to it, because we need to let the engine know that we've taken control of the throttle. So I write him back, and I CC it to all the shops I got. And I say, you know, I don't know how to help you. Guess who raised their hand?
So Tom goes, I've done that before. And I say, fine. I tell the customer, go see Tom, but pay with a credit card so you can stop payment on it if he doesn't do a good job. So call Blackwell, see what he says. Okay?
Thank you, sir.
All right, you bet. 602-508-0960. We'll be back in a minute. Forty-five minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday here from 10 to noon, talking about cars and car repairs. It's called Under the Hood with Mark Salem on 960 The Patriot, KKNT. Let me tell you about Automotive Dynamics in Sun City. Been around since 1982. I've known Chuck, the owner, since 1966-68 when I was working at a gas station when I was a kid. And the best part of Chuck is the second generation, just like me, my son and his son. His son, Derek, is involved in Auto Dynamics, north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. You'll like Derek. I promise you, you'll like Derek. It's the only shop in Sun City that I can recommend. It's a sad state of affairs that it is the only shop, but Sun City's largest is Auto Dynamics, north side of Grand, west of 99th Avenue. Good morning, Custer. How can I help you?
Well, I think maybe I can help you today. I've got hands-on experience as a former Volkswagen mechanic with both air conditioning in a Volkswagen and with aftermarket cruise control. So let me help you first, help your caller, actually, with information on the Volkswagen.
Okay, well, we only have 15 minutes left, so let's get to the meat and potatoes.
The guy should contact Gilmore in Las Vegas, or ICE AC in San Diego. They make aftermarket kits, and they also install them for Volkswagens of that vintage. And they are much more efficient than the old units from 40, 50 years ago, and they require less horsepower. So the dual-port engine in the 74 Carmen Ghia would be plenty for it. And also the Carmen Ghia is more efficient aerodynamic than a Volkswagen Bug, so it's going to be better in a Carmen Ghia than in a Bug. So Gilmore in Las Vegas or ICE AC in San Diego make kits, and they actually do install.
Okay, now okay? We've got a real small grill on this Carmen Ghia. Where are we going to get all the air to dissipate the condenser heat?
The condenser goes up front, and it's got a little electric motor over it.
Okay, so we're in an electric fan.
Yes.
Okay.
And even when you're stopped, you'll get airflow over it.
Okay, so the fan is going to give us the airflow. Where are we going to put the evaporator? I mean, where's that going to fit? Is that going to be
an evaporator?
Hey! Let me finish my question. I need to finish my question. Is the evaporator or the evaporator going to go on the passenger side, or is it going to be a box on the driver or on the firewall side? Where is it?
No, it's going to be under the dash on the passenger side.
Okay. And who's going to install that here in Arizona?
Well, that's a good question. Gilmore or ICE AC should be able to answer that, or it could be towed over to them. It's not very far, Las Vegas, San Diego.
Okay.
They're very experienced.
You don't like my swamp cooler on the roof?
Those don't work as well here, and they don't go on the roof on a Volkswagen. There are actually old vintage ones that go on the passenger door.
Okay.
They're kind of cute.
I understand your point. It's more, my visual is a lot more fun than yours. So everybody's laughing about the swamp cooler sitting on the top. I thank you, Custer. That's fine. But folks, I'm not going to side with Custer for this reason. Somebody here is going to have to install that. So we've got the manufacturer in Las Vegas or in wherever else they were, Gilmore in Las Vegas, and then we got ICE. But we got a guy here doing it, and when things go wrong, then you got three people that are barfing on one another. We got the manufacturer says the shop didn't do it, the shop says your stuff is bad, and then we've got the customer in the middle of all of this. This is not a job I would take. This is not it. I've never done it before. I don't know anybody who has done it. And obviously, Custer has background, and I wouldn't send a customer to Custer because we don't know who Custer is. So there is this dynamic. So if we're going to back it up, then Vince, he said Gilmore and ICE. And those two guys have a kit that will put it in there. My bet is the kit is going to, I don't know what the kit's going to cost, but it's probably going to cost in excess of 10, 12 hours to install all the components underneath the hood, all the components in the car, all the hoses, all the controls in the car, because we have to have fan and hot and cold. So by the time you're done, you're going to probably have $3,000 in this, and my swamp cooler is still a better idea, although it's not really as cosmetic as the rest of them. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And we got another caller, Gil. Who might that be?
That would be Richard.
Richard, good morning.
Good morning. We just bought a 2017 Honda Ridgeline. And my question is, with this car, it tells us the oil percentage when it's... Do you go by miles or you just go by what this on the dash tells you?
Okay. Are you using a conventional or a semi-synthetic or a full synthetic?
I have no idea because we bought it from the dealership and they said they just changed the oil. So.
Okay. How much was the oil change? Did they tell you?
No, they didn't say.
Okay.
But they said, you know, they'll give us two pre-oil changes. But my question is, we bought it at 54,000 miles. We're up to 58,000 now, or almost 59, and it says it's 40% of the oil is from the...
Okay. Well, in order to answer the question, I have to know, because conventional oil has a 3 to 5,000-mile oil change interval, and semi-synthetic goes from 5 to 7,500. And then we've got synthetic that go from 8 to 20. So if you have a synthetic oil in there, then on the downside, you're at 8 to 10,000 miles. Now, it's a great idea for us to keep everybody on the 3,000-mile oil change when they have synthetic, because the synthetic oil change is between $100 and $150, $175. It's rather expensive, but it lasts three times longer than a conventional oil. So we've got all these moving parts, and now do we use the percentage on the dashboard? So the computer, we're going to trust that the computer is going to actually have some kind of an idea what your engine oil life still has, and I want to suggest to you this, okay? It's going to know how many times you started it up cold, how long you ran it when it's hot, and how long it sat. It knows that. There is no sensor that's going to tell them the metal content. There's no sensor that's going to tell them the oxidation, whether the oil has gone to a temperature where it normally turns to a solid. It doesn't know if the oil is a minus 30 or if the oil is oil temperature could be 400 or 500 in a synthetic way. So I'm going to answer you the way my wife does it. We look at the oil, we write a sticker on it, and she uses a semi-synthetic, and I bring her in every 7,500 miles, and I don't care when that is. I know, because I'm a Chevron expert, I know with respect to oil that that oil will last 7,500 miles, and it's designed for that. My truck is a diesel. It holds, I don't know, 14, 15, 16 quarts of oil. I use a full synthetic. That oil change is closer to $200 and $215, but I run 20,000 miles on that.
Okay.
So I think I would, but here's the fear. I'm a shop, and I say to you, look it, forget all that stuff. I just want to bring you in every 6 months and change your oil. I'm going to give you two free oil changes. Let me decipher that for you. In most cases, let me decipher that for you. Ron says to Bob, listen, we're going to bring them in every two free oil changes, but we're going to get a chance at them. We're going to be able to sell them tire rotations. We're going to be able to sell them windshield wipers and a headlight polish. We're going to be able to sell them, oh, you need front shocks and rear shocks and springs, and look at the front's drooping, and oh, your front end is about ready to fall off. You see, I'm spending a small amount of money to get you twice into my shop and to bite your head off.
I'll find out what oil they use when we take it back in.
Okay, if you go to MarkSalem.com and go to MarkSalem.com and look at the FAQ that talks about oil, everything is there that I just said to you. So in case you, that would help you. Okay? All righty. Good luck.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. Oil. Oil change interval. I gotta take notes. And Gil, you got another caller? I'm ready.
Oh yeah, it's Mike.
Mike, good morning. How can I help you? Mike?
Hey Mark, how you doing?
I'm good.
Yeah, good. Hey, listen, I bought a Lexus 2008. It's got about 160,000 miles on. I got three questions for you.
Okay.
The gas cap says use premium fuel only.
Okay.
Now, what does that mean, premium fuel? That's the
super,
first question.
Super unleaded.
That's okay, so that'd be like the 9, 91 octane?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Or whatever it is, 91. Yeah. Okay. So it's telling you have to use that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why is that?
Because they want you to use it because it creates the perception that you're driving a race car and that this is a premium car and it absolutely has to have premium gas. And if you don't put premium gas, the engine will probably fail early. All right. I want to ask you a question, okay? All right. The difference in the explosion, the difference in the explosion between regular and super, the distance between those two in the explosion, in an aggravated way, when you take a balloon and you fill it up, okay, when you pop it, it goes, okay, that is like a millisecond of time. So here's the difference between regular and super. Regular ignites a little sooner and with a little bit extra time, but premium, one molecule ignites two, two ignites four, so the push is a little bit more, but we're talking about a millionth of a second in burn time. So in an exaggerated way, regular burns like a balloon popping, boom. In an exaggerated way, for me to be able to talk about it without visuals, premium, one molecule ignites two, two ignites 400, 400 ignite 4 million. So the burn is longer. Will your car care? No. Will Mark care? No. Will you ever spend any money fixing something that because you didn't use right premium? No. Now, Mark, do you have a high-performance car?
Perfect.
Yes, I do. Has your wife have a high-performance car? Yep, she did. What'd she have? A Jaguar. Did it say premium? Yes. When you filled it up, what'd you put in it? The cheapest gas I could find. So there's going to be people out there that argue with
me. My question, because I'm sitting at a pump right now.
Yeah.
I'm sitting at the pump right now, and I had to call you.
Okay.
Now, my second question, you're the oil expert.
Mm-hmm.
It's telling me in the book, Mobil 1, fully synthetic, 5W30.
Okay.
Do I have to use Mobil 1, or what can I use?
No,
synthetic, as long as it's, or
well,
even a...
It's a 530. 530 should be a semi-synthetic, but you're wrong or I'm wrong. And so, yes, it's a synthetic. Now, there's only four companies that make oil for the United States: Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, and Chevron. Everybody has oil. If they got it in the can, it's produced by Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, or Chevron. I want to tell you something. It's General Motors wants us to use Dexos, but Dexos is made by one of those four companies for General Motors. General Motors wants you to use it because they make a lot of money on it. Mark never has poured Dexos in any General Motors new car or used car in my life, because I'm going to use Mobil, Shell, Phillips, but actually I pour Chevron. So the answer to your question is it's not going to care, and you can use any synthetic with the same weight that you want. Okay?
Yeah, it's full synthetic. I found it. It's a 530.
Okay.
Okay, my third question. The car has lifetime transmission fluid. Okay, it has almost 170 on it. What kind of maintenance do I need to do on it? It's a sealed transmission.
Well, we can change the fluid in the transmission. 160,000 miles is six times around the equator. So if I were you, I'd find somebody that knows how to do it and just change the fluid. It's a drain and refill, and just change the fluid, and I would feel better about that.
Drain and fill. Okay, anybody up in North Phoenix?
Oh, if you want to go to Blackwell. Oh, you know what? You call Kurtz at Bell and I-17. Call Kurtz.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to Eric. He's a whiz. I mean, he is good. And I'm going to have to finish your question after this break because I'm a minute late already. So we'll be right back. You stay there. Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next hour, we're talking about cars, and you're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960. I left Mike hanging, so I'm going to take Mike right off the bat, and you had one other question, and I'm all ears.
Hi, Mark. Yeah, thanks. The car only came with one key fob. How would I get another one for this car?
I would call a couple of Mobil key guys. And I think you said that was a 08 Lexus. So you say,
right.
I'd like another key fob. Now, I'm going to – do you have a pencil handy?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. 480-598.
One, two, three, four.
Okay.
480-598-1234. You're going to ask for Alan. We have a key guy that is a wizard, and you're going to ask Alan if he would come to your house and make a new key fob for your Lexus, or would he want to do it at a shop that's close by where Mike lives?
Okay.
I don't know if he'll do customer pay stuff, but I know he does that for shops, and we lean on him a lot. So that's why I'm having you call Alan. Alan's my son, and he interfaces with this guy, and the two of them are like twin brothers of different mothers. So Alan can answer the question for you.
All right, fantastic.
Okay, I want to make one other comment. I'm happy. Is this Lexus for you or your wife?
It's mine.
Okay, all right. You know the Lexus is a fancy Toyota, right?
Yes.
Okay, but I also want to tell you, I'm going to test how old you are. The Eldorado, the Toronado, and the Riviera, what do they have in common? Back in the 80s and 90s. Okay, well, the Eldorado was a Cadillac, the Toronado was an Oldsmobile, and the Riviera was a Buick, and they were all the same cars. So, they were all made by General Motors. They had different bodies, but they were all the same cars. So.
I've had Toyotas before, Mark, so I kind of know what I was getting into.
Yeah. No, I think you made a good choice. I love Toyotas. Except the early Celicas back from the 70s, who nobody could fix, the Toyota is in the top. Well, I mean, the five cars that are the top is Chevrolet, Ford, Chrysler, Toyota, and Honda. Those have a double digit of the market. Everybody else is single digit, all the way down to 0.1. So, no, your car's in the top five of my world. So, anyway,
well, one of the reasons why I bought it, Mark, is it has a 2.5 liter V6, which is, you know, I'm not the speed around guy. I just like the mileage, and I really enjoy it.
Okay, and put a raw egg between your, just duct tape a raw egg to the throttle, and you'll add a third more to your fuel economy.
Okay. Fantastic.
All righty, Mike.
Yeah, all right, Mark.
Thank you. All righty, Dan, you're up next.
Mark, I got a question about computers and starting the car. Does the computer, if you put a new battery in your vehicle, does the computer count every time you start your car, and you can actually scan that information out?
Nobody would care.
I was just wondering how long a battery, how many cranks you would get out of a new battery.
Oh, okay. I think I can answer that better. The life of a battery depends on how often you use it, and it has so many cycles where we take voltage out and put voltage back in. It also has a life expectancy that's bigger or smaller based on heat or cold, and I'm talking about extreme heat and extreme cold. And it also has to do with the vibration of the battery, how nice the car rides, because as we shake the plates, the plates will shed little pieces of lead. That'll fall into the bottom of the battery, and that'll short the plates out somewhere down the line. And then it has to be securely fastened to the car so it doesn't bounce around. But to answer your question, ever since I've been doing car repair work, which I started in 1973, and I'm really only 40 years old, but I started in 1973, most batteries in my world last about 3 years. And that's no matter whether they're taxi cabs or whether they Grandma Moses drives them once a week to the liquor store. It's about 3 years.
So in 3 years you can get what, 10,000 starts?
Well, it would. I don't know.
What I wanted. I just want to know what that number would be.
Okay. Let's do that. Well, the question is how many times are you going to start it?
Let's say you start it. Well, if you say you drive, let's say 5 times a day.
Okay. So we're going to do 5 times 365. So it looks like we have somewhere in the vicinity of 2,000 starts per. What did I say?
Year?
Per year, okay? And then we're going to take 2,000 times 3 years is 6,000. Then we're going to take that 6,000 starts over a battery that's 150, well, over the battery. So, gosh.
If your battery is like 3 years old, then you would get 6,000 starts.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Well, yeah, I was just wondering if they documented that for any purpose. I just wanted to know that when I put a new battery in, I said, I wonder how many times I cranked this damn car up before the next time it dies.
No, we don't have that information, but let me ask you a question. Did you hunt price or name on the battery when you bought one?
No, I hunted convenience out in my driveway. I pushed the car out, and then AAA showed up. That's how I did it. But okay. I was wondering when I put the battery in. That was a couple of years ago.
Okay.
You know, I wonder how many. I wonder how many cranks I would get out of a new battery until the next one, till this one dies.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, let me touch on a couple of things you said. You remember when your mom said, "When you don't have anything nice to say, to keep your damn mouth shut."
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so I'm going to say a couple things. First of all, there's a company named Johnson Controls that makes about 85% of all the batteries sold in the United States. I want you to close your eyes and follow this picture. You and I are going to walk into a bowling alley with 100 lanes. But the lanes, the back where the pins are about 3 feet higher than the foul line. And this conveyor belt brings all these batteries down that are black plastic and white plastic. And when they get to lane number 2741, then the battery goes down that lane. We slap a sticker on it. It goes to the bottom of the lane. We put it in a pallet and we send it to whoever ordered it with that sticker. And it's the same doggone battery as everybody else has. So I don't ever shop brand. I'm looking for the cheapest price, and that's my advice to everybody is if you need a 7450, it's a model 74 and 50 is the month it's warrantied, then just shop price. Just be done with it. So in your particular case, it doesn't make any difference. But I also want you to know that it's not a good idea to have someone test your system in your driveway because they don't have the necessary equipment to do it, and you can't test a dead battery because they all fail. So you have to have between 12.8 and 13 volts in that battery before you can test it, and if it's sitting down there at 12.1, 12.2, 12.3, then they're all going to fail. Number two, I was at a grocery store, and this is an example of just once. This has happened many times. I was at a grocery store, and an elderly lady next to my truck couldn't start her car. She had her hood open. Well, I was going to just walk around to the back, hop into my bed of my truck, get my jumper cables out, but the road service guy shows up. And so I'm sitting there watching him, and I'm just kind of just sitting back watching him. And so he puts his cables on the battery, and he tells her to hit the key, and nothing happens. No click, no noise. I look at the battery cables, and they're corroded beyond belief. Now, I know I could have started her car for you. I'd have just taken a big pair of pliers and wiggled those doggone cables back and forth. I would have turned the headlights on first. I'd wiggle those cables. Boom! The headlights come on white and bright. Hit the key, ma'am. Okay, go get your battery cables cleaned. He didn't do that. He sold her a new battery. Now, it could have needed a battery, but he didn't know that. Neither did I. But he sold her on the idea because nothing happened. He sold her a battery. So there's a lot of road service guys that'll do that. I'm not a fan of that. I've seen that too many times where somebody came in with a new battery and the cables were really, really dirty. And then I say to myself, one and one equals two. So you let me have my say. Thank you very much for that. Good luck to you. But hopefully everything will work out good. I think that was Dan, wasn't it?
Yes, that was good.
Okay, okay. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and somebody's else on the line.
Say hello to Don.
Don, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Good show this morning. Listen, here's a real brain twister for you. I have an 01 Sonoma, four-cylinder, five-speed manual, and I have it in the shop over getting a new slave cylinder put in. We had clutch problems, two masters, a whole bunch of diagnostic. Anyway, we pulled the drive shaft out to get the transmission out, and the tongue of the yoke, it's a normal shiny, and it slips in the rear of the transmission. The internally splined tube slips over the output shaft in the tranny.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's a big groove in the yoke, in the tongue of the spline on the front of the drive shaft, and it extends from nowhere on one side of the yoke to a groove on the 180 degrees opposite of that nowhere area, and it's about a 10,000th of an inch deep groove. And it gets from a shallow groove to a deep groove exactly 180 degrees opposite of the nowhere side of the yoke.
Okay.
So, do you have any idea what would cause that?
Well, the answer is no, but let me ask you a couple of questions. Is there a leak at that rear seal?
Not yet.
Okay. Well, here's what I'm thinking. There's a bushing back there that keeps that yoke that sticks through the seal, and then the yoke goes into the bushing. So the front half of that drive shaft is going to spin real true. If the bushing goes bad, or if we get some kind of an imperfection in the polished end of the male portion of that drive shaft, actually it's the female portion of the drive shaft.
Yeah.
I got my sexes mixed up there. Forgive me. So on the female portion of the drive shaft, on the exterior of the female portion, if you've got those things, I'm not going to care about it. I'm not going to spend any money on it. You already said there's not a leak there. I don't know what it is. It could be something that's part of the manufacturing process. I don't know, but I can tell you this much. If you look at the front of that polished drive shaft, you can see exactly the range of where that seal rides, and I'll bet you it's not more than a half an inch, maybe three quarters?
Yeah, it's about a half an inch.
Okay,
wide.
So that's how much the rear end is going up and down, and so the drive shaft's going in and out a quarter to a half an inch, and no leak. I'm happy
if
you...
Well, it's seeping. Yeah, it's starting to seep a little bit.
I know, but you said it had how many miles on it?
175.
Okay. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, if I was going to do anything, I'd probably put a bushing in that tail shaft and put a new seal on it, or just put a new seal in it. But I'm not going to replace the drive shaft. Now, if you want to replace the drive shaft, and I'm happy to sell you one.
can I just replace the yoke? Part of the drive shaft?
No.
Did I get the drive shaft? Does it sound like it could be an out of balance condition?
No, you know that.
On one side of the tube, or a misaligned bushing, failed bushing?
No, if you had any kind of play in there at all, you'd have a bad vibration on acceleration and on deceleration. If that thing runs smooth all the way through the gears from zero to when your wife stops driving it at 80 miles an hour, then there's no vibration. That seal, bearing back there, that tail shaft bearing, there's nothing wrong with it. There's just nothing wrong with it.
Would it have to be a vibration serious enough to feel?
Yes.
To make that kind of wear in the tongue?
No, I don't know why that wear is there, but you're talking about maybe the bushing is bad, or you're talking about the seal's bad, or maybe the front yoke is bad, and I'm saying to you, all you got's a seep. If you want to do something, do the seal. But to replace the drive shaft because you got these marks in it that haven't caused any problems, I'm not quite sure I agree with you. Now, let me turn the correct question around. Let's say you're my technician. I would have the same conversations with you. I would say, Don, I don't care what you think. If we've got a seeping issue, now, if it's seeping, as he does 70 miles an hour down the road, if it's dripping, then there should be a bunch of oil that's from that area all the way to the back of the rear bumper.
Yeah.
So underneath the car, show me the big stain from where this seal's dripping instead of seeping, because there's a difference between seeping and weeping and dripping.
Yeah. Right.
And so if you don't have any of that stuff, I'm teasing you when I say I'll sell you a new drive shaft if that'll make you feel better. But
well, if I replace the drive shaft, I should replace both of them, the bushing and the yoke. And if it's starting to seep now, it could get worse if I don't replace those two parts, couldn't it?
Well, I think you, and this is what I would say to my technician, you're rolling the dice here with me, buddy, because you're either going to make the seep better or you're going to cause a bigger problem. And I think the customer didn't bring it in for an oil leak in the middle of the car. The customer brought it in because he's pulling the tranny for the slave or whatever. The idea is that I'm not quite sure I want to touch that car. I'm not quite sure that it's 19 years old. I don't think you're going to gain anything. You already have the skills to pull the yoke apart and the drive shaft out. Just put it back together. So that's my advice. I think you're scared because it's got some marks on the yoke that you don't understand. I don't think that you're taking into consideration you got a seep and a weep. as opposed to a leak. And I don't really think you understand that that drive shaft and this process of the bearing and the seal could easily cost you $1,000. So I think it's not worth it. But anyway, 20 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, the phone lines are open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You can be first, but you got to do it now. Electrician, and then he says, does anything shock you? And the electrician says, yes, the drivers. I would think the answer would be, does anything shock you? And the answer is yeah, when I touch the wrong wire. I don't know. It's just me today. I'm sorry. I apologize. Anyway, I'm going to tell you about a great shop. Strictly Diesel is up on I-17, and I think it's Pinnacle Peak. I'll look real quick here because it's important. I-17 and Pinnacle Peak. Strictly Diesel, Nate, he knows diesels like very few people I know. He is in the top two and maybe three diesel guys in the state of Arizona. He knows Chevy, Fords, and Dodges. He doesn't work on a lot of the big trucks, but if you have a Chevy, Ford, or Dodge diesel and you're his customer and you want your Chevrolet pickup truck oil changed, he'll still do that for you. But Strictly Diesel kind of means Strictly Diesel. So he's a good guy. I know him personally, and I know that he'll treat you fair, and I know he knows right from wrong. Bob, you're up next.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
I've got a question. I'm not sure if you'll be able to help me or not, but I recently had a dosing valve and a def pump go bad on my pickup. It's a 2014 Dodge with a Cummins diesel engine in it.
Okay.
So rather than repair that because there was no def pumps to be had, the truck was just going to have to sit, I just bypassed all that stuff, so I purchased all the required equipment, installed it, but now I'm getting a code come up on the programmer that says T-Charger boost control mod position exceed limit that I can't delete.
Yeah.
Should I be concerned with that?
Well, I think
the thing otherwise is running fine.
I know. Let's go back to DEF, diesel exhaust fluid. Okay, this is part of the emission control devices. And so what we're going to do is we're going to take this very caustic DEF fluid that you have in a tank and the engine administers and sprays it into the exhaust and all this other fancy stuff. So we're going to spray the DEF into the front side of the catalytic converter to help consume the carbon that's created by the diesel. So it's kind of like this. There's a barbecue underneath your truck. And you know what it's like if I take gasoline and spray it over barbecue. It gets really hot, the flames grow up, and I cook your steaks a lot faster, although it'll have a gasoline taste to it. So what you've done is you've taken that fire away from the exhaust system. And so what we've probably got is we've got a buildup of carbon somewhere because we're not properly burning the carbon, and as a result of that, you have the code. I don't know specifically what the deal is. I don't know. I can't answer that.
I deleted the def, the filter, and the manufacturer's exhaust muffler because that thing was humongous. I couldn't believe how big it was. And I bought I replaced it with another muffler, and I think it was a pretty reputable shop that I got it at. I'm not going to mention their name, but
yeah.
You know who I was talking about.
Don't mention their name because when you start moving exhaust around and disabling emissions control devices, it's not that you're going to get in trouble. If you had a
bona fide shop do the work, you could be in a lot of trouble.
So I'm glad.
No, I did the work myself.
Okay, there you go. That's what I was looking for.
I did. Yeah, the bona fide shop that I purchased the products at said we can't do it,
okay,
but we can sell it to you. So right. I did it myself. I took everything apart correctly because eventually all that stuff is probably going to go back in. You know, I may sell that pickup someday, and it's got to be legal to do so.
Yeah.
Currently, it's registered in the area where this stuff is not required. So I spoke to you before. I pull a trailer with it, an 11,000-pound travel trailer, so, and I'm always going up north, so I'm hitting it pretty hard. I think I'm blowing everything out pretty good, but...
Okay, hold on.
But
let me ask you a question. Is the place that did the selling of this equipment, is it south of the river or north of the river? The place that helped you. Don't give the name. Is the place located south of the river?
What river are you talking about?
The Salt River. The Salt River that runs east and west just north of Tempe.
I'm going to think it's north.
Okay. All right. There's a method for my madness there.
I can almost tell what the method is.
Okay. All right. So, so anyway, I think what you should do is do two things. I think you should call Nate from Strictly Diesel. And you say to him, Mark Salem says there's a better than even chance that you know. I've disabled the DEF system. I've changed the muffler out. I've got rid of the tank and the nozzle, blah, blah, blah. Tell him what you did. And this is the code I've got. Do you have any advice for me? Mark Salem said to call
okay.
you.
All right.
Both of those guys. You all call right. Alan at Salem Boys Auto.
2 minutes.
And you call Nate at Strictly Diesel.
Okay. I know Alan.
Okay.
He's the one that kind of steered me in this direction.
Okay.
Because this all happened at the same time my batteries were going dead, but I had 3 days left on the warranty, so I got two brand new ones for free.
Okay.
I feel real good about that.
Well, if Alan was involved in you disassembling your smog system, he's going to be unemployed on Monday when I get to work.
No, he wasn't involved in any of the work. He's the one that... I'm not going to go anywhere.
Okay. No. I'm just teasing you anyway. He already knows what our parameters are. He knows. And so what we can do and what you can do is two different items. So we just know we're going to, but advice is something that we'll give you. And it starts off with, well, this is what other guys are doing. And that's how it starts off. So it's just advice. Anyway, thank you for calling and thank you for avoiding that subject. Harry, you're going to have to wait until probably about 3 or 4 minutes from here because Harry, I know that you're going to tell me about your Karmann Ghia. I know that you're going to tell me about how fast it is and how it could certainly use that little bitty motor to fire up Bob's diesel truck. And so we're probably going to argue about that, but it's important for people to know that you hit your head numerous times as a fireman and you fell off the truck numerous times. And so as a result of that, you're not necessarily got all the molecules between your ears that normally others would have. So you're going to be my first call. I'm feeling kind of honorary today, so I apologize for that. Harry's my next caller, but if you'd like to join us, it's easy. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday, we're here from 10 to 12 talking about cars and everything else in the whole wide world. There's two shops in the town that I want you to pay attention to. Thompson's Auto Repairs in Mesa. It's the only shop in Mesa that I can recommend. Now, there's other guys out there, but I know Thompson's. I know their families. I know they do good work, and I don't have to be an investigator and spend a bunch of time telling you they'll treat you fairly. They've been around a long time. I've known their families for a very long time. Thompson's Auto Repair. On the other side of town is Kurt's Auto. Kurt and Eric are probably the best package of manager, owner, and lead tech that you can find anywhere. Eric is a wizard when it comes to working on cars. They're at I-17 and Bell, northeast corner. So you got Thompson's in Mesa, and you got Kurt's at I-17 and Bell. You can't go wrong with either one of those two places. And Harry, you go ahead and hit me with your best shot. I know that you have some comments.
Wow, I got hammered before I ever got in the ring.
I know you're good-natured, and they don't understand that you're 9 feet tall and you could take this little body of mine and twist me into a pretzel. So,
yeah, but your son's bigger than I am. He's a big boy.
He is. I don't know who his father is, but I love him.
Wow, he's big.
Yeah,
I got a well. Originally, I was just going to ask two questions, but you brought in the VW deal, so I don't know. I've had VWs. Tell you the truth, I've never had one with air conditioning because I figure, well, you know, it's just a little more problems. But, they do make some air conditionings, like the one gentleman said, I think out of San Diego and Vegas, the two, and they use the little Japanese Sanyo compressors, I guess, that... are a lot better than the old York one that they originally had. But,
yeah, you're not going to hang a York.
You're right. Finding somebody to keep it working. I don't know anymore. I've kind of got out of VW. Yeah. So I don't have any more.
All right.
I know my VW thing had air conditioning at one time.
Yeah. All right. You got a question. Let's talk about that.
I got two that I kind of want to handle here. One is a battery issue. You were talking about the different batteries and everything, and you've got three or four different types, you know, the AGMs, I guess, and then the spiral wound and then the lead acid.
Right.
Which one do you think is the most reliable one?
They're not, because the AGM is supposed to be for four-wheel drives, and they bounce around more than, you know, your wife's car does. And the lead acid, they're a little bit dirtier, and they don't last as long, but they don't cost anywhere near as much as the AGM
right.
and other those other MAP batteries. So it's really a matter of just kind of match. On my Dodge truck, I don't have a big dog battery in that. You know, I'm shopping price. So I'm doing that on the Dodge truck. My wife's, I'm shopping price. But if I had, you know, if I had something that I was going off-road on a regular basis, I'd probably step it up and buy something that's a little sturdier than the lead acid battery that I presently have today.
Yeah, because I'm having an issue with the lead acid. It just kind of quit. I had to have it jump started, and it jump started fine and everything, and I charged it, and it was showing like 11 volts initially, and went up to, you know, to 13.2 or whatever. And
okay.
It seemed to crank fine, but took it in. They said the battery was good, so I'm not.
Okay, well, we're
going
to get to your second question, but I got a comment.
Okay, second question.
Wait a minute. The 11.2 is the real issue. Did
right.
the brake lights stick on? Did something happen? Did some system stay on and take it to 11 volts? But then after you jump started and charged it, then it hit the top end, which is the 13.2, 13.3 number. So I don't know the answer to that, but those, if it happens again, that's where I'd be looking. But anyway, let's go to your next question.
Okay, the next one is an oil. My Ford. You know, came with semi-synthetic and everything, and I've always kind of been a synthetic fan. I did the oil change on it with Mobil 1, full synthetic, and it's a 530. And is that a true fully synthetic?
Yeah.
I thought you said something about 530s not being...
Well,
we're only semi-synthetic.
You can't believe the calls I got on my cell phone when I said that, but there is some discussion, and as if there's a specific and firm designation on 520 and 530. And I think most of us will agree that most of the time 530 is a semi-synthetic and a 020 is a full synthetic. But again, the can will tell you what you need to know. So I didn't mean to make that generalization, but yeah, the oil will say on the can if it's a blend or semi-synthetic and whether it's a full
right.
synthetic. Okie doke.
Right. Well, I was just wondering if they were kind of skating the issue on the, you know, whether it was full synthetic or semi, and it does say full synthetic.
On the
jug and everything. So I'm just wondering about that, and
because
I've changed it over in my Ford, and I know how much you love Ford. So,
well, you said Ford, so I'm going to move on. Mark, you're the next caller, and I'm not doing any advertise for those trucks, but Mark, I got to put you on hold, and Jim and Jerry, stay right there. I'm up against a break, but Gil's going to get us back in 2.5 to 3.5 minutes. We'll be back. Shop. There's only one in the town I can recommend, and that's Automatic Transmission Exchange. Been around since 1968, 40th Street in Washington. Phil worked on Barney Rubble's stone car with stone tires. He's been around the block, and he started with the old Power Glides and even the old transmissions before that, and obviously he can handle the new one. So he's at 40th Street in Washington, Automatic Transmission Exchange, and just like I promised, Mark, you're up next.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 2009 Mercedes E320 Bluetech.
Okay.
It has 250,000 miles on it. I've replaced the entire suspension in the front four times, all of the motor mounts four times, transmission mounts. So I take good care of the car. But now at about 2,000 RPM, it has a serious vibration. And the tach will fluctuate 100 to 300 RPMs. And the thing that I'm kind of concerned about is, you know, it has a sealed transmission and 250,000 miles on it. I'm wondering if that's the first place I should be looking.
Okay. I need to ask you some questions. So when you're bringing it up in RPM, are you moving down the road or are you in neutral?
Moving down the road.
Okay. Does that vibration there when you're not moving down the road and you just bring the RPMs up in neutral?
No.
Okay, it's more than likely in the drivetrain. And
the
question is, does it get worse with speed? Does it change with speed?
If Well, this might help a little. If I'm going up a hill and it downshifts and gets to 2,000 RPMs, it'll lurch. And I've got to step on the gas to get it to stop doing that.
Okay. Well, now you've thrown in a lurch on top of a vibration, and we don't diagnose cars with those kinds of broad-based. If you went to a shop, I would hope that you would say, we're going to deal with the lurch, or we're going to deal with the vibration, and if one fixes the other, then you're lucky. I can't answer your question on your Mercedes, but have you got a pencil handy?
Yeah.
Goodies. Goodies in North Scottsdale. Tell Goody that Mark Salem said that he doesn't have a prayer in hell of being able to even come close to the diagnosis of this. But because he fell off his motorcycle not too long ago and hit his head, maybe it rearranged his hard drive, because here's the deal. He knows more about Mercedes-Benz than anybody I've ever met in my whole life. He is the smartest Mercedes-Benz guy in the whole wide world. So I'm sending you to the guy, and you're going to use my name, and you're going to take as little time as possible. So don't plan on talking to him for 30 minutes, because then he's going to call me and use bad words. So, but you call Goody, and he's up in North Scottsdale, and he can help you. I promise. He's going to ask you more questions, but he can help you. So, Mark, thank you. Thank you very much. Jim, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. I'm one of those types of guys that wonders how things work, or if I do this, will this happen? And so I have a very simple question.
Okay.
When I'm going down the road in the wintertime and I turn on the heater, does that cool the engine any degree at all?
No.
Okay. Okay.
Well, and let me clarify that. If you're driving down the road and it's 40 degrees, the thermostat's going to be open, and we don't care what the ambient temperature is, but if the water continues to cool, then the thermostat will continue to close. So the thermostat wants about 200 to 210, maybe 220 of temperature. So if the coolant gets too cold, the thermostat closes to slow the circulation of Freon. If it gets hot, or coolant, and as it gets hot, it opens. So if you're running your heater, first of all, the heater core has a fan behind it. So when you turn the heater on, we're actually have hot water coming into the heater, but what leaves is colder water, because the heat from the heater core has been blown into the cabin of the car. So even though we got warm water coming in, we're sending cold water back to the system. Is this like a concern that you've got a temperature movement?
No, the needle stays right in the middle where it always should, but I was just curious, if I have heat coming into this car, does that cool the engine at all? Well, it kind of might be a dumb question, okay. But I just...
Well, as we take heat away from the engine, it's going to give back cold water. So then the engine's going to say, oh, well, the temperature just went from 218 to 210 because we just got a half a gallon of water out of the heater core, and it's had the heat removed from it. So yes, the engine will turn around, and the thermostat may or may not make it, but the decision to do that is so minute. Let me change your question. Mark, have you ever had a problem or fixed a problem on any car since you were just a little boy in diapers that had to do with the heat exchange or the heat difference in the heater application and not? And the answer is no. But I think I've answered your question. I hope I have.
Yeah. Okay. So if I'm running the air or the heater, no matter what's running, the engine will stay the same amount of heat all the time.
No, there's controls that will ensure that the temperature in the engine is going to be between 210 and 220. So now, in the old days, and it works on some of the cars, if your car starts to overheat, you turn the heater on. Now, what happens is, as the hot water comes into the heater core, which is a small radiator, the fan cools that water off and sends it back to the engine. So in the old days, when it overheated, you turned the heater on. Your wife wasn't particularly happy, because you're going to melt the shoes that she's got on in the passenger seat, but that was one of the ways we could cool down an engine. In newer cars, it's not possible, but in the older cars, it is. I got to run, but thank you. Thank you for that, Jim. Jerry, you're up next.
Mark, long-time loyal listener, first-time caller. I absolutely adore your show. You are wicked smart, my friend.
No. You know, I got to tell you, I've been known since I was a little boy with all my brothers and my fathers. They would call me Blizzard. Okay? That's what they called the blizzard. And this is what they would say to inexplain. They said, if bull excrement was snow, this kid would be a walking blizzard. And so every once in a while, and I said bull excrement when actually I used the right word and I got cocked to, and so I'm not allowed to use it anymore. So bull excrement is good enough. But thank you for your compliment.
There you go.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, I've got a 2010 Honda CR-V.
Okay.
It's got 79,000 miles on it. I baby it, absolutely.
Okay.
And I got a question about the ride in my car.
Okay.
And I've noticed over the last few years, I'm feeling like every bump and bump and rock, I went ahead and replaced all the struts. And I think I had a slight improvement in the ride, but it still rides very firm and very rough. And, of course, I drive on city streets in Phoenix, which are awful.
Okay.
But, and the tires are still good, but I'm thinking, if I were to buy new tires, will that tend to soften that ride a bit, or am I just stuck with what I have?
Well, I mean, you got two questions on the table. Number one, I wish you would have called me before you replaced all the struts, because here's what could have happened. You see, when people bring their cars in, I'm going to take their tires to the maximum inflation that's written on the tires. Let's pretend it's 35. But the door sticker says, in order for this tire to carry the appropriate weight, it only needs to be at 29. Okay? I know they're going to get better fuel economy at the higher inflation of 32 or 35. I know that it might ride a little stiffer, but nobody cares and nobody says anything. Plus, when the husband is stupid and he hits a big pothole, a fully inflated tire has a better chance of going through the pothole than a tire that's soft, because the wheel hit the tire, cut the sidewall, and now we got a bad tire. So, I want you to open up the door, and on the sticker it says 32 in the front, 28 in the back, or whatever it is. I want you to set those pressures the way it is, and here's the question. The question is did that change it? So, you could have had a shop that just said, like me, 35 and everything. And your ride suffers. So, if you move it back down to where the sticker says, then if your ride improves, then somebody was trying to do something good for you, but they... Your butt's a little bit more sensitive than most people's, and so as a result. Now, tires, the answer is heck yes. My wife has a set of tires right now that she hates. And of course, my son sold them and put them on her car. So, here's the problem with her. When we go from Payson to Pine, there's different sections of the road that are really good, but when you hit the bad section of the road, this car has a really loud road noise, but when you hit the really nice section, it's really nice and quiet.
I'm with you.
I drive the car and I show her that. I said, honey, it's just the road. So behind my back, she's gone to my son and said, you know, I don't care what your dad said. I want a set of tires that doesn't make that noise. He tells her the same thing. He says, Mom, no matter what tires I put on there, he says, you got different road textures, so you got different noise. And he says, Mom, you really ought to stop drinking, because this would make sense. And you're married to the car guy after all. My God. So now what we're doing is we're taking the tires are those really rubber band tires, and they're real fancy wheels, because that's what the missus wanted. So now he's ordering different wheels, and he's going to try a different set of tires. And I'm telling you right now, this ain't going to work.
But not going to work.
I'm not going to argue. Please, just make sure your inflation is based on the doors and live with what you got. Otherwise, you're going to spend a lot of money, and I fear you're going to – you have a 10% chance of making it better, and you have a 90% chance of your wallet being a whole lot lighter and you being in the same boat you're in now.
That's exactly what I wanted to know, my friend.
Alrighty, Jerry. Well, good luck to you. And if later on today that it's announced that the local radio show host was just shot in the head, all of you will know that my wife was listening to the show. And that'll work good. Okay, I want to cover something we covered last hour, and I've got time to do it. I am the captain of the Secret Santa Club. The Secret Santa Clubs have been going on since 1989. I'm inviting you, if you want, if you feel empty at Christmas, if you wake up in the morning and you go, there's lots of people, I wish I would have done something. If you just feel empty, then you need to get with me, and here's why. Since 1989, we've spent $201,000. Every dollar that comes in gets spent. I'll give you some examples. We go to rest homes, and we say to them, who has no family? John has no family. We do Christmas for John. We get him cologne. We get him shavers. We get him new shoes. We get him some nice clothes. He has no family. We go to all kinds of group homes where there's children, usually sub-teenagers. There's children who are in the home because they're not home for whatever reason. And the state doesn't have money to make those kids Christmas. So it's up to the group home, and obviously budget money's tight. So we have always gone to group home. In 1999, we had 70 kids in 9 group homes. We spent $7,136, and we made 70 kids happy for Christmas. We don't charge anything. 100% of every dollar goes towards people. We did 108 kids. In 2001, we did 108 kids in 16 group homes. We have an army of women that go out and find these people and buy for them. We did a family of 9, a whole family of 9, that terrible story. In 2007, we did 10 adults in a nursing home. We did 100 bags of toiletry items for the homeless shelter in Phoenix. 100 bags of toiletry? I don't know if I pronounced that right. I don't care. So if you want to be a part of the Secret Santa Club, here's the deal. You donate money. You can call with a credit card. We don't care. You donate money, and at the end of the day, you get a complete sheet that documents every dollar and everywhere we went and everywhere we did. And you'll feel like the rest of us. You'll feel a little bit better around Christmas as you look at your grandkids, open all your presents and all that other kind of stuff. You'll just feel better. You'll just feel better. So if you want to be part of the Secret Santa Club, you can. No one knows who's there except me. And no one has a list of who's there. You're never going to have somebody call you and say, hey, you donated to the Secret Santa Club and da-da-da. That's never going to happen. So we have lots of people that participate. If you'd like to help out, you can. And, again, my email address is mark, with a K, at marksalem.com. Mark at marksalem.com. I'm going to pass your email, if you want to be a part of the Secret Santa Club, to the ladies that handle that. Mark collects the money and pays all the bills. They go out and find the people necessary, the people that need to be made happy, the people that have no one to make them happy, the people old and young that have no possibility of having a Christmas like the rest of our kids do. So that's kind of what it's all about. It's about Christmas. So this is the first time I've ever said anything on the radio, but we've been doing this for 30 years, and the Christmas at the Salem House is always a lot better, as my wife and my daughter and a lot of other the ladies talk about some of the kids that they gave presents to. The little boy who's in a group home that has 2 pairs of Levi's, and that's all he has. And they're kind of in bad shape, so he gets 3 or 4 pairs of new Levi's, and his name is written on them with black magic markers so they don't get mixed up with anybody else. So the women are really good, and if there's one of you that's a lady that would like to participate, and perhaps we might send you as an elf to a nursing home close by your house, talk to the staff and find out who has no family. Which elderly man or woman that's in your nursing home has no visitors for Christmas and has no one buying them presents, and they sit in their bed while families go in and out of the nursing home and take care of other people? So if that's something you want to do, we'll help you. You have to give us receipts. We copy all the receipts, and we send a copy of every receipt to every person that's in the Secret Santa Club, if you want it. Some people say don't send the copies of the receipt because that's too much paperwork. But 100% of every dollar gets spent on what we've talked about. The kids, the elderly, the nursing homes, the people that take care of homeless people, stuff like that. So it just makes a better thing. Now, if you have a car question, mark@marksalem.com is another place you can get a hold of me. Actually, it's the same address. Just put car question on it. Please leave your phone number, and I'm going to call from a blocked line for obvious reasons. But a lot of times I need to ask questions. Does the vibration happen when you're sitting there or when you're accelerating or when you're in deceleration mode? And when the temperature gets hot, where is it on the gauge? Is it halfway on the gauge? Is it 3/4 on the gauge? Or is it in the red zone on the gauge? And when you have that engine noise, is it related to the speed of the engine? So if it goes knock, 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 and you speed the engine up, does it go knock, 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 or does it just go knock, 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 no matter how fast you're going? So that's the kind of interaction that I usually have. Unless, of course, I can just answer your question without calling you, but sometimes, and I have real fat fingers, and typing is just not real something I like to do. Plus, on my iPhone, my thumb will cover the whole screen. I'm just making fun of myself. And so typing on my cell phone is impossible. So Mark at MarkSalem.com. Between now and whenever, ask your car repair company what symptoms they're going to fix with their suggested repair, and make sure you pay with a credit card, and you want your old parts back. Okay? Those are the keys. Old parts back, pay with a credit card, and ask them what symptom they're going to fix that you have now.